Welcome to A Handful of Hope, where we bring you heart-to-heart conversations with heart-centered people. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of A Handful of Hope. I am so happy and grateful to have Jackie with us today, who is a professional happyologist, number one best-selling author of the book Get Happy and Create a Kick-Butt Life, motivational speaker, and Harvard-trained success coach. Jackie is known for her no-nonsense, science-based strategies that create life-changing impact for executives, business owners, and womenpreneurs. She's one of the most sought-after professional development consultants of 2020. Jackie is a trained psychotherapist who has been quoted in Yahoo Finance, Wall Street Journal, Daily Worth, We Women's Magazine, and SHRM for her knowledge with helping clients overcome limiting beliefs, business obstacles, and forming success habits that work. In addition, Jackie's 20-plus years as an award-winning marketing executive has changed brands from $1 million to $2.3 billion for organizations such as Pfizer, Glaxo, SmithKline, and Sanofi. I probably horribly butchered that name. Jackie is a certified leadership and success coach affiliated with Harvard University and Medical School. She paints her life canvas at the beach in South Carolina, and her mission is to inspire action. Jackie, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is a wonderful place to be, and I really am happy to share and help as many people as I can.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you here, and I have to ask first, so a happyologist, first of all, that's my new favorite word. I've never seen that word before, and it just is so fun to say. What is a happyologist?
So if you aren't familiar with positive psychology focuses more on the science of happiness. And I help people through the scientific ways in which to improve your happiness and focus on the upward spiral versus the downward spiral that the old paradigm of depression and taking medication as being the alternative or only way to really improve your level of happiness. And there are enormous ways to improve your level of happiness. In fact, it has been shown that happiness leads to your success, and happier people are actually healthier. They actually do fight off disease. They have lower levels of stress, and they enjoy what they do. They're more productive, and therefore they actually do make a better income because of it. So happiness is overall good for your health, and it affects all the other well-being areas of your life. And that is why I am such a huge advocate for other people to be an advocate of their own happiness, and why choosing happiness is so relevant and crucial to not just your short-term choices, but your long-term choices to have sustainability in all areas of your life. And especially now during this pandemic, I think it's really difficult overall for people, whether you suffer from anxiety or depression, or you're starting to experience that, because isolation is extremely detrimental to our mental health. Isolating is not healthy, and it's important to surround yourself with people who lift you up, which is even more of a feat right now. Hence, I think many of us are doing Zooms and things that actually help us to connect. People need people.
Yeah.
So it's really, really important to recognize that, people are here for each other in new and exciting ways too.
Yeah, it's true. Like you and I were sharing off camera. One of the things that's been really joyous for me during this whole time is I've met so many new people that I would have never met otherwise because of the disruption in my day to day. And it's been really enriching for me. And it didn't make me as aware as I was, or it made me more aware of how much I really valued connecting with people and how much I appreciate that. I want to come back to this happiness as a choice piece and then tie it into the loneliness. I've always been a big believer of happiness being a choice. But inevitably you say happiness is a choice, and there's pushback for it. Oh, you think I choose not to be happy? What do you mean? It's easy for you to say those kinds of things. Why do you feel people resist that notion that happiness is a choice?
I think that's a really good question, because I don't know if anybody recognizes that we all have the ability to increase our level of happiness. We all have a happiness set point, and 40% of our ability is to choose if we want to be happy or not, and the ways in which you can improve happiness. The 40%. Wow. So the other 60% is not by choice. It's you didn't have a choice to the family you were born into, or maybe the socioeconomic environment you were born into or exposed to. And so that lends to 60% of your level of happiness or well-being. But 40%, which now I think might be 50%, I think, because there's more research behind it, is where you do have the ability to improve your level of happiness. So the pushback, I think there's two ways of looking at it. One, sometimes people feel like you can't get something for free, and they take advantage of the fact that your happiness is actually free. It doesn't cost you anything. Smiling doesn't cost you anything. Yeah. Increasing your levels of brain activity, like the feel-good oxytocin or endorphins that you can stimulate within your own body and mind, actually improve your level of happiness. And feeling good is a good thing. And so some people have some self-worth or self-limiting beliefs behind their worthiness of happiness. And I work a lot with people who also are more givers, and they overgive, they're overachievers, they are perhaps people pleasers, and put their happiness on the back burner to the point where there's fatigue, burnout, feelings of unfulfillment, and depression. And so, you know, happiness is like putting the oxygen mask on yourself first, right? Take care of you first. Know thyself. Listen, go within. It is a, happiness is a inside inner game. It's an inside job. And it, to me, it's a practice. It's a lifestyle. And it's about becoming more aware of your feelings and recognizing them, and also recognizing that your feelings are fleeting, that your well-being is reinforced by feelings of fulfillment and joy, which actually is translated in our brains. So our entire body, from our head to our heart, all the way down to our feet, can be regulated based on your thoughts, and how you choose those thoughts can affect your feelings and your actions. And I think one of the missing pieces that a lot of people don't talk about, two missing pieces. One is compassion, having compassion for yourself. And this becomes a form of a controlled emotional response. You know, having self-compassion or compassion toward others actually gets translated into positivity, which translates into kindness. And who doesn't want more kindness in the world right now? I think we're all learning the lessons and the blessings and the small ways in which kindness can touch the heart of people that right now is imaginable as opposed to unimaginable. And the increased awareness, it equates to starting each and every day with what you want to create as opposed to what's stopping you. And so oftentimes people are focusing on what they don't want as opposed to what they do want. And if you do want happiness and you do want certain things that are fulfilling in your life, then focus on them. Put your energy toward them. Focusing on what you don't want, because we do live in a world that is a lot of media, a lot of negativity, which our ego tends to attract. Our ego goes right to that like a magnet. And it is our job as individuals to be focusing more on what feels good to us, what feels positive and fulfilling to us. If that means you've got to turn off the TV and the news to go focus on what feels good and right for you, there's nothing wrong with that. That is the choice that you need to be making every single day, not just during a crisis.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Jackie, that 40-50%, I wanted to circle back to that real quick because I think that's so fascinating. So the devil's advocate is going to say, well, the 60%, 50% I can't control. You know, who are my parents? My parents beat me up. I was raised dirt poor, those types of things. Mm-hmm. Is that fixed or can that change based off of a perceptual shift we have? And I'll give you a quick example. Earlier today, I came across this little 1 minute clip, or maybe it was 2 minutes, of a guy who was probably the most beloved professional mixed martial arts fighter of all time. And he was doing an interview with Joe Rogan on Joe Rogan's podcast. And mm-hmm. he was telling this story about a bully he ran into. And there's this bully that was 3 years older than him, always bigger than him, tougher than him, beat the ever living, you know what, out of him, humiliated him as a kid. And he's driving his car as an adult now. He's the world champion, probably the most famous fighter in the world, arguably the best of all time. And he's driving and he sees this guy on the street.
Oh, gosh.
And he goes and he pulls over because there's this voice telling him pull over. And his friend is saying to him, what are you doing? Why are you stopping? He's like, I think I know that guy. So what are you doing over here? He goes up to the guy and sees him. And the guy kind of cowers because everybody knows who he is. He's a super famous person now. And this was the guy who used to torment him. And he says he goes up to the guy and he had always had this kind of anger he carried around about what he would do if he ever crossed that guy again, this person who was his tormentor, his humiliator. And he said he saw him in that moment and he looked at him and he said, man, what are you doing here? He said, when I was a kid, I wanted to be you. You're tall, you're big, you're a good looking guy. You have so much opportunity for you. And the guy's kind of like, well, you know, I've had a hard time, down on my luck. And he reaches in his pulls out the money he has. He says, like $100 and some, all the money, gives it to him and says, you know, get out of here. Give yourself a shot. He says about a month later, the guy comes by his father's house, the childhood home he grew up in, and was asking if he was there and said, I just wanted to tell him thank you because he took the time to stop and say this. I got a job. I've gotten sober, whatever it was. He completely changed my life. And so then the fighter guy is saying he felt so good in that moment. He felt so immensely good. And he had almost this place of gratitude for the thing he went through in life, because not only did that compel him about what his passion was in this martial arts thing, mm-hmm. but now to come full circle, it became one of his greatest sources of gratitude. And it was so freeing. So that's a long way of asking that 60 to 50% that we may not have control over, can it change if we have a perceptual shift later on about our sources of happiness?
The answer is absolutely yes. and I appreciate you sharing that story, because I think a lot of what we learn about ourselves is usually in the toughest times we've ever experienced, because you learn about how strong and resilient you are, and you also learn how to bounce back. So you can choose to bounce back in a way that might be equated to anger, or you can choose to bounce back in a way that equates to compassion and generosity or gratitude. And so there's two ways in which almost every successful person begins to have these very important beliefs, okay? Belief number one is the future can be better than the present, so that even though you might be experiencing something now that doesn't feel so good, it doesn't mean it's forever. And the second belief is having the power to make it so. So that you, me, everybody, we all have a power within us, a life force that is so empowering that you can use it in any way that you really want. And that power also is related to our brains, because our brains are malleable. We have the ability to change or retrain our brains. And by doing so, you have the capacity to go from a stuck mindset of maybe staying in that point of being the victim, or you can retrain your brain to a growth, or what I call thrive mindset, to be to have your test be your testimony, to go from, you know, victim to victor. And that might equate to, yeah, having to go within, learning the lessons, doing some work on yourself. And, you know, I grew up as a dyslexic kid. So I was, I mean, even kids can be mean. I was bullied even as a little kid because I was the shrimp of the class. But I, plus I was dyslexic, not that the other kids didn't know that, but I already felt inadequate. And so I was really hard on myself. Plus I had these, you know, these kids kind of picking on me. And so, you know, I could have chosen to stay a really shy kid who, you know, didn't feel like she could accomplish anything. And I could have hung on to that. But instead, I chose at one point in my life that I'm like, I'm not gonna take stand up for this anymore, because one, I know that I'm a good person, and I know that I have the capacity and the ability to learn whatever I want to learn and reach my own true potential. And that is not based on what's going on around me. It's based on a feeling that I have of knowing myself and becoming a better person, because I want to feel better about me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter about what other people are using their perceptions as me claiming that perception.
Yes.
And so perception is a huge, you know, it's like what Carl Jung says. I am not the problem. I choose to become, I forget what he said now. I am who I choose to become, as opposed to not taking the problem and having it define you. Mm. So you as an individual at any point in your life can decide how you want to define yourself. And I think it's important to recognize that each and every one of us is a leader if you decide you want to take on self-leadership. And that takes a strong belief in self and retraining your brain and almost feeling sorry or maybe compassion for those people who have their own hurt within themselves to be taking it out on other people, which I don't think is right, obviously.
Yeah.
That hurt people hurt people. They probably don't even know what happiness looks like.
You mentioned a minute ago, I want to dive a little deeper in this, that it's often during our toughest times that we, you know, we really learn who we are. We get a scope of who we are and what we're made of. And that, my mind just went blank on it. But right now, I'll come back to it. It'll pop up in just a second. Right now, many of us are going through the time of this recording. It's April 21st. 2020, we're right in the middle of the corona, COVID, people across the world are on lockdown, sheltering, placing. Many have lost their jobs, they're facing uncertainty. Even if they work for what we thought was a very stable company, Disney's laying off people right now. Virgin Australia just went into to hire outside people to see if they're even going to be able to make it through. Like big, huge companies have been around for a long time. And there's so much uncertainty, and there's so many people that are in that space of, gosh, you know, I'm getting pushed. And then on top of that, they're isolated, they feel alone, they're getting squeezed from multiple angles. And this is an opportunity for them, I think, to see that resilience, but they may not be thinking that way. This is the second piece of it. You mentioned that we have this feeling or this sense of something, and I think that most of us have at some point in our life this sense of something more that we could be, feel more, be more, do more. I call it the quiet whispers of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge with to listen to that, right, is when we have the noise in here screaming so much, well, the economy, your job, your this, your that, your house, your rent, your mortgage. The person who's in that space right now, who's struggling, who's listening to this and says, okay, happiness is a choice. I'll play. But I didn't ask for any of this other stuff going on. I feel sad. I feel lonely. I feel anxious. I feel maybe even depressed. What are some things that we can do if we're in that space right now that might help us start to turn the page on it and get us out of that, you know, going from that kind of almost victim to victor, to going from that evolution of this is defining me to I'm going to define how I show up during this time.
Right. Well, that's a really good question. And I think that any kind of rude awakening that you are experiencing is an opportunity. And I'm sure a lot of people have heard, you know, during the most difficult times is when opportunity blossoms, but it's actually true. I mean, even Shakespeare, who went through two plagues, that one, I think one plague lasted 14 months and people had to self-isolate, quarantine themselves. And that's when he wrote Romeo and Juliet. That's when he wrote Macbeth. That's when his creativity and imagination and true purpose started to flow. And so, and I'm not saying that, you know, everybody's Shakespeare. What I am saying is that you have an opportunity now to hit the reset button, and that your job and your title is not who you are. That's just one facet of part of your life. And you have actually an opportunity to decide what it is you want to control. So you can't control a company, you know, going into bankruptcy or not being able to continue employment for people. There's, you can't control the pandemic right now other than taking care of yourself, washing your hands, staying at home. So focus on what you can control. You know, taking care of yourself right now is so important. I think a lot of people have a hard time doing that. They're so busy working, and becoming their title that it's become their purpose. And then they become lost in who they are because so much of what they do is what they've become. But we are not our jobs. We are not our titles. We are really all people who have a heart and have maybe a higher purpose in our lives. That doesn't mean, you know, obviously self-isolating, anxiety, depression doesn't exist, because of course it does. So then come up with your short-term and long-term plan. You know, I think that when people feel stuck or lost, it doesn't mean they're in a bad place. It just means you don't have a plan. So come up with your plan. What is your short-term plan and what is your long-term plan? And what do you want it to look like? Don't have it be based on, you know, don't have your destiny be based on somebody else's idea. Have your, be in control of your destiny. You are the driver in the driver's seat. You're the CEO of your own life. So there are other ways to make money. There are important ways to take care of your well-being. In fact, well-being is, there's three levels of happiness, actually. The first level is global happiness, which is laughter, dancing, friendship, everything that everyone's craving right now is global happiness. That is the things that are really temporary feelings of joy and fulfillment is that socialization, being around others, laughing, all those things are important. We need those. We need to have laughter. We need to have people in our life. But that's just the first level of happiness. The second level is well-being. You know, our well-being, our finances, our community, tribe, our health, our living situation. I mean, these are all social components to your well-being. So if you're concerned or you have fear of your well-being being maybe depleted or not working right now, you still have the control to improve your well-being. Don't allow what's going on around you to be the compass to what you have the ability to do. You've got to, this is a time that we're all feeling stretched, and it's a time to get creative. The third level of happiness is spiritual happiness. That is the ultimate level of recognizing what my true purpose is on this planet. What is your passion? And finding that sweet spot to help others and at the same time monetize that. So that is the true level of spiritual happiness, is doing our purpose in this world and feeling fulfilled by doing that. So there's two ways you can look at this coronavirus. Some people might look at it like, thank God I don't have to go to that job anymore. They may not have even liked that job.
Yeah, absolutely.
This could actually be an opportunity for you to decide, what is it I really want to do? Maybe you want to start your own business. Maybe you want to write that book. Maybe you want to, you know, help other people in ways that you always wanted to do, but it's going to happen sooner than you planned. You know, so that could be your long-term plan, but that doesn't mean you can't do short-term actions to start putting that, you know, into place and doing what sustains you. Yes, you need to eat healthy. Yes, you need to have a roof over your head. Yes, you may not be able to pay all your bills, but pay what you can, because we live in a sustainable world. So we all need to be contributing in some way to keep a roof over our heads and to keep, you know, food on the table. And don't be afraid to ask for help, because that is why we're all here. We're all here to help each other. Really, that's why we're all here. We're here to help each other. And if you are having a hard time, and you are feeling anxious and you are feeling depressed, there's lots of resources out there, including the United Way, who's helping people monetarily and with money, to help fill, you know, close that gap.
Yeah.
There are self-help resources and, nonprofits that are helping people with their anxiety and depression. There are, like what you and I are doing right now. There are meetups now on Zoom.
Yeah.
So if you are not feeling a sense of community and you are isolated already, but there are ways to overcome the self-isolation, is join a meetup. They're free.
Yeah.
You know, people are joining all kinds of meetups right now. There's games you can play on Meetup right now. There's support groups. There's entrepreneurial support groups. There's I want to start a new business group. There's you know, mom and parenting support groups. There's so many different resources out there that are available that cost $0. It only costs you really your time. So how you utilize your time is the best way to play offense as opposed to playing defense. And I think part of what has thrown people for a loop is that nobody, you know, this wasn't what we all, you know, asked for. It kind of put a boomerang in a lot of people's lives. Especially people are upset because they've been planning their life, and they have a life agenda, and this really doesn't fit their life agenda. So it can be very upsetting. And we don't want to turn anger inward, because that turns into what is known as depression. And we don't want to keep looking ahead to the future in a way that is doom and gloom and fear, because that creates anxiety. So what do? You focus on the present moment. You focus on right now. You focus on breathing. You focus on gratitude, what you do have. You align your mind and your body in a place where you feel inner zen. And it's amazing how 6 minutes of meditation can retrain your brain and can actually increase your happiness set point to the point that it can change your entire day, because you set a new feel-good intention of how you want your day to be, as opposed to how you are thinking the world is supposed to be on your behalf.
I love that. Jackie, I have so much I want to ask you, but we're going to have to wrap it up because in the interest of time, everyone, I encourage you to rewatch, whether you are a seasoned and very happy person already, or if you're working on your happiness game right now, there is so much that you can take away from this, whether it's the idea of looking at those three different levels of happiness and trying to rise up in one, whether you're going from global to trying to get to the spiritual level, or you're just really focusing on global right now, to recognize that you have choice in this, that there's a focus on the present moment versus getting locked in the past or getting the doom and gloom of the future. I love the notion of Shakespeare, you know, writing Romeo and Juliet during the Great Plague in the 1600s, or I think it was the 1600s. And imagine being your own Shakespeare, channeling your inner Shakespeare, whether you had Shakespearean nightmares during high school literature class or not, you can appreciate the breadth of the legacy of his work that's lasted over 400 years now at this point. Yeah. You know, imagine that, something that has had that level of legacy that's created during the darkest and the most desperate of times, at a time when there wasn't technology, there wasn't even electricity or Wi-Fi or any of those types of things.
Yeah.
And if Shakespeare could do that, perhaps you can ask yourself, what could you do? Remember, Shakespeare, before he was Shakespeare as we know him, he was just some guy with a dream, just a human being with a pen and a paper and some ideas floating around his head, and probably a bunch of people told him, this is stupid, it'll never work, and all those types of things. But he believed in, you know, you may be in a situation right now where the world is pushing you, you're getting squeezed, you're getting challenged, it's a struggle to be happy. But ask yourself, really, you know, what's the magic inside of you? What could you create? If happiness was your priority, what would that look like? I love what Jackie said about your canvas. You know, ask yourself what canvas you would like to paint today, and choose it intentionally. Don't let life choose it for you. Choose it yourself. Jackie, this has been absolutely incredible. I thank you so much for sharing with us today, for being a part, for sharing your magic, your gift. This was absolutely incredible. Thank you.
You're welcome. Namaste.
Yeah.
Stay healthy.
We'll see you next time, everybody, in another edition of A Handful of Hope. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening. If you're finding value in these conversations, please rate and review on Apple, Google, Stitcher, or wherever your favorite place is to listen to.